Hey everyone, before this episode begins, I just want to let you know there were some slight audio issues because I had to record through Zoom instead of my normal recording site. Long story short, just some technical issues as to why that wasn't able to happen. But the majority of the episode turned out great. I just want to let you know there is some small audio issues at the beginning, but they sort themselves out a little way in. So without further ado, let's dive into the episode. On this episode of Still Loading, Brandon Cole. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I have an award-winning blind accessibility advocate and consultant in video games. His name is Brandon Cole, and he has worked on games that you might have heard of, like The Last of Us 2. And actually, I don't know what other games you've worked on. Brandon, first off, how are you doing today, and what other games have you worked on?
Well, first of all, I'm doing fantastic. And second of all, I hope you've heard of The Last of Us 2. I mean, even if you don't like it, it's a game that a lot of people have definitely heard about. Anyway, what other games I've worked on? I've worked on the Jackbox Party Pack games as well.
Okay.
So if you're familiar with those wonderful little party packs, I worked on the accessibility of those. I worked on a dice rolling app for tabletop RPG enthusiasts that are blind. Mm-hmm. I worked directly with the Twitch platform to make their platform more accessible as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I've worked on things I can't talk about. Yeah, that's right. I have ongoing projects that I cannot discuss, but I'm trust me when I say I'm still working and still making big things happen.
NDAs are our best friends, totally.
Yes, they are.
So
they're everywhere.
So to start off, though, I guess let's just kind of address the obvious question. So, like, how did you get into gaming? Like, the one question I was really curious about was, what is, like, as someone who is sighted, I can, like, my enjoyment from games comes from being able to see my actions on the screen. So as someone who's blind, what is your enjoyment? What do you get out of video games? Because it's a completely different experience.
Yeah. I've always had a good appreciation for great audio design. And that to me is like the audio design for a game is my version of the graphics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, if a game has great audio design, then I will at least listen to it, pretty much guaranteed. Because, you know, even if I can't play it, I might still get something out of that experience just listening to it.
I getcha. I getcha.
But, you know, in games, my big draws are, you know, even though I will listen to a game that has good audio design, I'll listen to a game that has not so great audio design if the story is good. My big draw is narrative. I've always loved good stories. I like video game characters. I like the idea that video game stories are interactive.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that simple idea that this is a story you're not just watching like a movie. You have some level of agency, some level of control in the, you know, in this story, and you're making this story happen. You're making the story unfold in some way. And I've always liked that about video games. And it makes me feel like video games are kind of a much more personalized medium than a movie is. You know, a movie is never going to change no matter how many times you watch it. A video game is going to change every time you play it.
Yeah, that's a very good. I mean, I'm with you on that 100%. It's one of the, you know, it's there's a professor that I had on who teaches game design, and he talked about how video games are a lot closer to theater than they are to movies because every performance is slightly different. You're even though the play is going to be the same, you're still going to have the same plot points. There's going to be differences for every single performance versus a movie. Yeah. It's the same thing no matter what every single time.
Yeah.
And games are similar to that. You know, it's a little bit different every time. So with that question out of the way, I want to ask, how did you first get into games? I first discovered you on my friends over the LAN Parties podcast, and you told this story there, but for my listeners, how did you first get into games?
Oh, I think I also said there that I love telling this story because I do. Because it's funny. Let's get into it. So how did I first get into games? A practical joke. That's how I got into games. Played on me by my older brother. we decided that it'd be funny to prank the blind kid.
That's so nice of him.
It's so great. And what did he do? I'll tell you what he did. He said, "Hey, bro." I don't think he said those words exactly, but he said, basically he said, "Let's play Mario Brothers together." And at the time, I'll perfectly honestly, I was actually in the same camp a lot of sighted people are in even today, where my response was, "But that's a video game. I can't play that because it has the word video in it, and that means you have to see it to play it." And so I can't remember how he convinced me to do it, but somehow he convinced me to do it. And so we head into the room where our Nintendo Entertainment System is located. He hands me a controller, starts the game, and off we go. And before you know it, I'm breaking bricks and collecting coins and extra lives and saving princesses and destroying bosses. And somehow, wow, I did it. I beat the entire game. But then, ladies and gentlemen, then the punchline occurs. And the punchline to this joke is that my wonderful, wonderful brother had handed me the unplugged second player controller he played the entire game. All of my button mashing and inputs amounted to nothing at all.
Oh, but the thing God. Is,
I remember clearly at the time I was pretty crushed by this because I actually felt great. Like when I thought for the few seconds that I thought it, when I thought that I had somehow persevered and completed the entire game, I was elated. Like I was super excited and happy about that I did this thing I never thought I could do. And so when he finally revealed the punchline, I was utterly crushed by this. And but I remember at the same time, basically just making a vow to myself that eventually one day I would beat one game without his help. And that was the only thing the vow was at the time, just that I would beat one game without his help. And that was the catalyst that got me to just start trying things, to start playing games. Even if I ultimately couldn't play them, I would just try games and see what I could figure out. Because one thing I learned from that Mario Brothers experience is I started to learn what the sounds of the game meant. And I started to realize that there were patterns there. There were things that I could follow. There was an understanding that I could achieve once I knew what all the sounds meant.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just start trying games and seeing what I could do in different games. And I had some successes and some failures. But I finally did beat a game without my brother's help. And the first game I ever beat without my brother's help was Killer Instinct for the Super Nintendo.
Okay. Because especially as a fighting game, I could see how that would work with all the sound cues.
Yep. Because fighting games are kind of the naturally accessible genre for the blind, because you're always right across from your opponent. You know, you never have to worry about where your opponent is. You have to worry about what side they're on, but it's a 2D plane that you're usually fighting on. So you're always right across from them. There's never any question about where they are. It's kind of naturally accessible, and I gravitated to it, and that was the first game I ever beat. And then I ran out to the living room to tell my completely uninterested mom that I'd beaten this game. But, you know.
As such is the case with every mom who doesn't understand video games, like, oh, yay for you.
Mom, come see what I did! She's like, oh, that's cool. All right, that's great. Okay.
I remember my mom would try. I tried to get her to play Donkey Kong 64, and I would get so mad at her because she couldn't understand the controls.
Oh, wow.
I feel bad in retrospect that I even got upset with. Like, she had never really played a video game before, and I'm here like, here's a 3D game with awkward camera controls.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So
here's a game that is not recommended for, like, people just starting out in games to play. But,
and you know, why are you not good at it?
Why are you not perfect at this game?
Oh my goodness. So, all right. So that's how you got into gaming. And that's one of the first, is the first game you beat.
Yeah.
So how did you transition this into consulting on video games?
Well, it took a while. It took a while.
Sorry. I haven't done that in a long while. Time.
The Stained song is, it's been a while, but I know. We'll go with it. We'll go with it.
I know.
all right. So it didn't happen right away, but here's the thing. And this took me several years to realize this, but I think back on it now and I realize that I've kind of always been doing this in my head, even before I did it professionally. Because I always had, every time I encountered a game that I couldn't play and I couldn't get past whatever, I always had these thoughts of, well, if this existed and if this was here and if this was here, then the game would be accessible and I could play it. I always had those thoughts in my head. I just never did anything with them. And it was actually my fiance in the early 2000s, the woman that is now my fiance, who basically started the train a rolling by saying a certain three words, and not the three words you're thinking of. The three words are, you should blog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, at first I was basically like, nah. Like, this is the early 2000s, so I'm gonna bring up an old concept that the new kids might not be familiar with. But I had a live journal at the time. and I said, I can't even keep up with this. How do you expect me to blog? And she said, well, I mean, you should do it because there isn't really a resource for this kind of thing right now. No developer knows what they need to do. You know what they need to do, but they don't know what they need to do.
Yeah.
You should be that resource. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll try it. And then so over the next few years, I would blog occasionally. And as predicted, I was pretty bad at it at first. But I would do it occasionally. And apparently that occasional blog would be enough. Because I would get noticed by a person in 2014 who's going to do a panel at GDC about accessible gaming. Mm-hmm. And he invited me to be on his panel at GDC with other mobile game developers who made their game accessible in some way. And I was the blind gamer perspective on that panel. That was the idea. So that
okay.
There's a bunch of mobile game developers and a panel moderator and me. And I went to that panel. I flew to California, to San Francisco, went to GDC in 2014, did that panel, and apparently did really well. I was told immediately by my colleagues that I had, quote, killed it, end quote. And it went really well. And the most important thing I think that panel did was it introduced me to Ian Hamilton, who was the aforementioned panel moderator. And okay. Ian Hamilton is... and most people in the accessibility community will agree with you on this. Ian Hamilton is one of the premier accessibility advocates that currently works in games.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally what he does is advocate for accessibility in games. It's his whole thing, and he's great at it. And I got his attention at that panel, and I knew I got his attention only a few years later though. When he invited me to be one of the first ever speakers at the Game Accessibility Conference in 2017.
Okay.
It was the first conference of that nature, the first Game Accessibility Conference. And I was one of the few speakers. I think there were four or five of us that year. Just it was, you know, literally the first year of a conference. It was a burgeoning thing, and I helped bring it in.
Okay.
And when I went and did that speech at the Game Accessibility Conference, that is when I met Naughty Dog, the people at Naughty Dog, because they were there, you know, checking out the conference, checking out the speeches and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that worked out was Ian was nice enough to let us know before our speeches. He let all of us know, but he, you know, me especially, because, you know, I couldn't look out at the audience and see the people in the audience.
Yeah.
He was kind enough to go, okay, so here is who is in the audience being represented. And he's like, you know, Microsoft is here, Naughty Dog is here, and like, oh, Naughty Dog is here. So I was already a big Naughty Dog fan, not because I could play their games, but because I enjoyed listening to them. Because again, great audio design, great narratives, you know, I was a big fan.
Yeah.
So I made a point during that speech, very, not so subtly, say, what I wouldn't give to play a game like The Last of Us.
That's smart.
Very smart. And you can actually, it's very light. It's barely there. But if you listen very carefully in the recording, you can hear one of the Naughty Dog representatives is in the front row. And she goes, oh, we need to talk to this guy. So after the speech, they talked to me for about an hour that night. And it was a great interview. Just talking about accessibility, what games would require, what games like the games that they make would require to be accessible. Just being generalized, you know, nothing specific yet, just totally general discussion. And I didn't necessarily know that anything was going to happen. I really didn't.
But at least the ball started rolling and you planted a seed inside their head,
yeah,
an idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that, but I didn't know that anything was going to happen beyond that.
Yeah.
But it didn't even take that long. It was like a week after the Game Accessibility Conference when I got the email asking me if I would be willing to fly down to LA and sell the entire team on the idea of blind accessibility for The Last of Us 2.
That's awesome. And
that happened. And I think that was, you know, if not at the conference itself, that was the defining moment where I finally decided, you know, I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm the right one to do this. And so I went there and I did it, obviously. And, you know, never looked back. Never stopped since then.
That's so cool. That's awesome. And now, have you been able to maintain a working relationship with Naughty Dog? Not asking for any stuff that in the future, because obviously NDAs, even if you are working on something, but have you been
able to... I will say yes, we keep in touch. Yes.
That's good to hear.
I can say this. I didn't stop at launch of The Last of Us 2. I continued to provide feedback based on my own experiences playing The Last of Us 2. So, and some of my feedback did end up in future patches for the game. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yes,
it never really stopped.
So when you are consulting on a game, how wide is your reach of like what you're trying to implement? Because obviously they're not going to know what blind gamers need, but do you like bring in someone else who maybe is deaf or hard of hearing for like that angle of it? Or like how far do you coordinate, or do you handle just the blind side of it?
So my specific specialty is total blindness.
Yes.
And back when I first started in The Last of Us 2, I probably couldn't have brought in anyone else. These days, if I need to, I probably can, because I know a lot more people now. And I was not responsible for any of the other people that were brought in for The Last of Us 2. There were 7 total consultants on The Last of Us 2, 7 accessibility consultants for different disabilities.
Okay.
And that was an example of Naughty Dog finding all of them on their own. Which is great.
Awesome.
I'm glad they were able to do that. I'm glad they found the right people to do it. But no, I wasn't the one that brought anyone in. These days, though, if a consultant asked me, you know, what do you think? Who should we contact? I definitely could point them in the right direction because I'm now a big part of this community and I now know people. But back then, when I first started out, it was just me trying to sell them on blind accessibility and luckily succeeding.
Yeah. That's really cool. So what are some of the challenges that you've run into while consulting? Like, is there anything that has been unexpected or just a common, maybe a common issue that happens across the board?
I think honestly, the biggest challenge in my career, I think, is the initial convincing.
Okay.
I think that's still the biggest challenge. I love telling the story because he actually, the person involved in the story actually talks about it when he talks about The Last of Us 2. And so I love to talk about it too now. So Rob Krekel, the lead audio director of The Last of Us 2, he was actually, believe it or not, when I initially came in and did my whole selling thing to try to get Naughty Dog to do this, he was one of the doubters.
Oh, okay.
His initial response was essentially, I don't know. I don't think we can do this. It's too much. It's just too much. It's too much work. It's too much, you know, audio. It's too much, too many things. I don't know if we have the memory to handle this, all that stuff. He was one of the doubters. And so while I may have convinced a significant portion of that team, because I must have, because they eventually agreed to do it. but I didn't convince him that day. And he told me later, and he's talked about this in his own speeches ever since then. He said, it took him seeing me play the game in a playtest. And I think the playtest he's referring to when he says that is the first one, because it was the first playtest that we did once we had started making accessibility features, you know, adding them to the game.
Yeah.
Once we had a few features in, I did a playtest and I got my first stealth kill, not just in The Last of Us 2, but in any game ever.
Oh, wow.
And it was moments like that that made him realize, oh, wait, this is a really good thing and we need to do it. So yeah, he needed the connection of, he needed to see the player connection. He needed to realize that this was a big thing for the blind community, because we were introducing something to the whole community that they just did not have up to that point.
And I think that's why I asked the question in the beginning about like, where is your enjoyment in games come from? Because like sighted people like myself, we only can like look at it from that perspective, you know, like that's the only way we know how to experience games.
Yeah.
So it kind of, I can understand why it took him seeing that, because it's like it's completely out of the realm of even comprehension until you are faced with it. So that is an awesome story. And once that, like I said, that's why I asked that question. So my listeners and myself, like, we can now understand your perspective and other people's perspective.
Yeah. That's the thing. The whole thing that we're doing is, you know, as consultants, is we're providing experiences to communities who may not even have them. There's so many more games out there that the blind cannot play right now than there are that they can play.
Yeah.
All those games that you love, sighted people, sighted listeners out there, your Red Dead Redemption 2s, your Witcher 3s, your whatever, chances are we can't play them. These are experiences that we just can't have, that you're enjoying every day. And that is what I am out here to change.
And I remember listening on the Land Parties episode, and if you want me to cut this out, I can, but you specifically mentioned a comment Rockstar made about accessibility in games. Has there been any improvement from them since that comment? And I guess, first off, explain the comments for listeners who didn't listen to that episode.
Yeah,
and
then we can definitely go from there. Yeah. So Rockstar, for some reason, I don't even know why they did this, but Rockstar posted a statement about accessibility in GTA 5 specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we're not going to make GTA 5 accessible because making GTA 5 accessible will cost us $128 million. Okay. So here's the thing. Here's the thing, listeners. Does accessibility cost money? Yes, it does.
Anything on a video game does.
Sure, sure. It costs development time. It costs, you know, you have to pay those developers. You have to pay the programmers that are working on this stuff. You have to pay designers to design the features. I understand that. It costs money. It's just, that's the way of life. That's the way of game development. But to arrive at a very specific number, like $128 million, seems a little unreasonable to me. And further research showed me how they got that number. And that number is not based on anything. That's not number is not based on accessibility research. And like, this is what we would need to do to make the game fully accessible. And I know that it would cost this much development time and this many development hours and blah, 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 blah. No, $128 million is exactly half of the game's budget to make. So they made the Grand Theft Auto 5 was made for approximately $250 million. So they just took that and they halved it. And they said, that's what it would take to make it accessible. Not because they knew what it would take, because that's a big number. And it's an off-putting and discouraging number. It's to make you think, oh, well, it is a lot of money. Oh, man, I guess they can't do it.
Yeah, it's to make everyone else think like, oh, okay, it sucks, but, you know, that's a lot
of
money.
We totally understand, Rockstar. Yeah. That's terrible. So it's ridiculous. But I will say that I haven't spoken to anyone there in a long time. I don't know if their stance has changed at all. You know, I'm not working on GTA 6, so.
Well, even if you were, you couldn't talk about it.
No, you're right. I couldn't talk about it. I'd probably say wasn't working on it anyway, I don't know. If I hope their stance changes. I will say that if it does change, I wouldn't expect to see it in like their next game. Because one of the big things about accessibility, especially blind accessibility, because there's a lot of systems and coding involved in designing these features, is that the ideal way to make it is from the ground up.
Yeah. So, otherwise you have to go back and patch everything in.
Yeah. And that's much more difficult to do. If you design your code with accessibility in mind to start with, it's going to be a lot easier to implement than it is to patch it. So, mm-hmm. so even going back to Rockstar, I'm still not saying that it would be easy to do, to make GTA 5 accessible post launch. And that was the whole thing. People were trying to get a GTA 5 to be made accessible post launch. So I understand that it wouldn't be easy to do. And I'm not even saying they should have done it. Because I know how difficult it is, you know?
Yeah.
I know how difficult it is to patch in accessibility. I'm just saying that if they did do it, I still don't believe it would cost $128 million.
And it's weird that they kind of tweeted the way you kind of described it. It's like they made that statement almost out of nowhere.
There's an article somewhere. I don't know where the article is now, but it was in an article somewhere that they were asked about it and they responded, "Oh yeah, it's $120 million."
It's weird because it's almost like they created a hill for themselves to die on that point.
Right?
It's very strange.
Exactly.
I'm going to take a stand on this right now, even though not a lot of people have asked me about it. But they should be asking about it because the more people who can play your game, the better it is, obviously.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What are some other games though that you've worked on, but that have decent accessibility features? And I always understand like the older the game is, the less likely there's going to be good accessibility features. But sure. What are some other games that you haven't worked on that have had good accessibility features, or maybe it wasn't quite where it needs to be, but you were surprised with what they did have?
Yeah, there's definitely games that I haven't worked on that have decent accessibility, kind of accidental accessibility. well, some accidental, some not accidental. So you might be surprised to hear that Mortal Kombat 11 has not one, but two features designed for the blind specifically. It's not 100%, but it's there. So Mortal Kombat 11 has, if you activate it, it has a little bit of menu narration. And when I say a little bit, I mean, it narrates the kind of the top level of menus. So it'll narrate the main menu. Well, I'd say the first two levels of menus, the main menu, the story menu, you know, the online menu will be narrated. The single player menu will be narrated. All that stuff is narrated all the way down to, I think the deepest level it goes is it narrates the titles of every tutorial section.
Okay.
You can choose in the training menu. So that's good, but it's not everything. It's not 100%. It's not what I would want if I was working on it, because you know, one of the things that it doesn't narrate, for instance, is every character's move list, which if you're a blind person, is extremely,
that would be really helpful to know.
it'd be great to know. Yes, especially in practice. Yeah, another thing it doesn't narrate is the practice menu. So you can go into practice, and in the game the practice menu is actually very powerful. If you're in practice, you can set up a bunch of different options. You can make the practice opponent do certain moves automatically, so you can, you know, practice against that move or make them do whatever combo automatically, so you can practice getting out of that combo, whatever you need to do.
Yeah,
you can probably do it in that practice mode. It's very powerful, but it's not narrated. So, you know, it's definitely an example of accessibility that is there, but it's not perfect. The second accessibility feature that Mortal Kombat 11 has for the blind is a feature in the audio menu. I believe it is called interactive audio cues. I think that's what they called it. Basically what it is in Mortal Kombat 11, during the fights, there are certain environmental objects you can interact with in some way. Sometimes you can jump over something. Sometimes you can throw something at your opponent. Certain things you can interact with in the environment, in the stage itself.
Mm-hmm.
This audio cue, turning this on, will play a repeating tone when you or your opponent are near one of those objects. So you know that either you're going to be, you know, something's going to happen in terms of, you know, them interacting with an object on you, or you can do it to them. And it's there for the simple reason of just giving us more information, because without it, you know, you could still press the button and maybe get lucky and maybe you happen to be close enough to interactable to make it work. But this way we know, you know,
yeah.
It's just that little bit of, it's something else we can now do in the game because of an additional audio cue. And that's a good feature, but I guess what I'm saying is Mortal Kombat 11 is of course a feature that has accessibility features and some for the blind, but, It's not a game I worked on, and it's not a game that is 100% perfect in terms of what it has.
Okay, that's really cool that it has that. That type of thing, those types of things are super interesting to me because it's like it's kind of peeling back the curtain a little bit and allowing us to see like, okay, so this is like what you, like, blind people are looking for in games to be able to play them.
Yep.
Now, you told a story on Lucas's on the Land Parties podcast. I thought it was really good. And I'm trying to balance between asking questions that I know you've been asked before because it to educate my listeners and myself, sure. But also at the same time, you know, ask new ones. But this one I know you talked about before. I think it's a really good story. How you wrote into, I think it was THQ.
Oh, THQ. The THQ story.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this story. I love the story because I insert the perfect dramatic pauses in this story. Okay, let's do this. Okay, so this goes back to something that I say a lot, and this goes back to something that I realized fairly recently within the last couple of years, is that in my head, I've always been an accessibility consultant, and mm-hmm. What really brings that home is what happened with THQ. So growing up, I was a big fan of the WWF SmackDown games. SmackDown 1, SmackDown 2, why SmackDown 3? Just Bring It was SmackDown 3, yes, I remember very clearly. Big fan of those games. Around the time of SmackDown 2, I was really wishing for some features to make that game more accessible. I wanted some things, and I really, really wanted them. And so I convinced my mother, again, uninterested in video games mother, but I did convince her to write a letter to THQ. We found their address and everything. I convinced her to write a letter that I dictated to her to explain to them the features that I wanted to make the game more accessible.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the features that I brought up were narrated menus. I wanted to know what I clicked on when I clicked on it. And I brought up a feature where we could more easily find a ladder in a ladder match so we could climb it better. And okay. a feature where we could more easily throw our opponent onto a table in a table match so we could put them through the table. You know, wrestling, big matches, you get the mm-hmm. idea. These are the things that I wanted because I was having trouble with those things in SmackDown 2. So we sent the letter in to their address, and a couple weeks later, we got a response back. And I was excited. I was like, oh my God, they actually listened to me. This is amazing. So we open the envelope, and we pull out the letter that we got back. And, the letter we got back, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this wonderful podcast, was maybe not exactly written by a human being at the time. You see, because
it wasn't personalized.
It was not personalized because the letter stated, thank you, Brendan, for your appreciation of our tremendous graphics.
That's so messed up.
THQ, remember when I said I was blind? But here's the thing, and this is the follow-up to the story, though, and I said this on the other podcast, too, I'm pretty sure. But the thing is, I can't actually prove this because they sent me such a terrible response letter. So I have no proof. But I think maybe someone was listening. Because if you go to SmackDown 3, Just Bring It, there actually is a little bit of narration when you click on an item. If you click on story mode, it says story. If you click on options, it says options. There's a little bit of narration in that game. And not only that, there actually is a way to specifically throw your opponent a key combination that specifically throws your opponent towards a table in SmackDown 3. So that's awesome. I can't prove it, but I think maybe I might have actually gotten through. Still, the story is hilarious. The letter was awesome and funny.
So that was SmackDown 3. Oh, okay, so have you tried looking up... it was Just Bring It, you said, right?
Yeah, Just Bring It had the features I think may have been... Might have come from that letter, but I don't know.
Okay.
Can't prove it.
Have you ever tried reaching out to any of the developers of the game?
I haven't. Not directly. Mostly because they're no longer involved in the WWE games these days. So I didn't know necessarily that there would be a point in reaching out to them. Those games are entirely taken over by 2K now in this modern era. So entirely new development teams and so on and so forth. So I don't know who I'd even reach out to at this point.
Well, but you could like go to Moby Games and then see who at THQ. Like, I mean, you obviously would have to get lucky with the person that you're reaching out to. But like,
yeah,
like mm-hmm. I've done that before. Like, I'll look at credits for games. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let me see if I can get them on the podcast or something like that. And I've actually gotten a couple people to respond, believe it or not. But it, you know, it's still hard to, you know, you have to track them down either through LinkedIn or, you know, a whole bunch of research, but I'd be curious if like there was any directive from higher up from that. Like, it'd be cool to find out.
I mean, I would love to find out. I would love to have some proof that I actually influenced that, that game, that I consulted on that before I was even paid to do it.
that'd be Give great. Me my money now.
Yeah. You now owe me at least $100.
That's funny. I was thinking of questions, and this kind of leads into this one. Have you ever thought about looking back at the history of accessibility in games, at least through blind accessibility? Have you ever thought about like doing a research project of like going back and seeing how far back you can see either intentional features or unintentional features? Have you ever thought of doing that or done anything like that?
I have not, but that is primarily because I don't need to, because Ian Hamilton has already done it.
Oh, really?
Ian Hamilton has a on his website. I don't have the exact link offhand, but he actually has a spreadsheet that goes through the entire history of accessibility in all video games.
Holy shit.
For all disability types. And there is stuff that dates back to the 60s.
Wow.
And this is not just blind accessibility. This is just all types of accessibility.
All accessibility. Yeah.
And he makes a habit of sharing this list every single year. Just to remind people that this is an ongoing conversation, that it's still happening. But yeah, I don't need to because it's already been done.
That is fascinating. I'm actually on Ian's Twitter right now trying to find his website. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, you'll find it if you do enough looking around. I wish I had the link on me, but I do not.
No, it's okay. That is really cool, though. I had no idea that, and especially for stuff in the 60s, like I believe the first commercial video game wasn't until like, I don't even think
70s, like 75,
like early 70s. Yeah, it was an arcade cabinet. I'm blanking on the name of it right now.
I believe it was Pong.
It was something. It was like a space game, kind of like it wasn't even Space Invaders. Hold on, let me try googling it. First commercially released video game. It was an arcade cabinet, and I'm blanking on the name. They say it's a Pong, but I know for a fact it's not. I just can't remember the name of it. It was done by the same people who did Atari, Nolan Bushnell and Ted Dabney, I believe. I think it was Space War, I want to say.
I think that might be right, actually.
It's the cabinet is like this bizarre, like blue, and it's in a very strange shape. I don't even know much about the game, but in any case, yeah. So I'd be curious. I'm fascinated that it's all the way back to the 60s. I wonder if those are like electromechanical games or something that.
It was something. I'm trying to remember what it was, but there were some considerations being made. I think what it was is back in the 60s, there were some games that were made just for the disabled.
Okay.
You'll have to look at it, but it was a while ago that I actually looked at this, but yeah, there was considerations being made even back then. Not many, but they're there. And the cool thing is, as you go through that list, you'll just see the number of things that happened in each year that he wrote down just increases. Like, you can literally watch over the timeline the conversation about accessibility becoming larger and larger.
That's so cool. It's Computer Space, by the way. That's the name of it.
Okay.
I was able to finally find it. I can't imagine how much time that took to make, because there's like hundreds of thousands of millions of games. So that's incredible that he has taken the time.
It took a lot of research.
I can't, like, even going back to the 60s, man, like I did a series on RTS games. And the earliest one I found was like from 78. And even that was just like trying to like go and find stuff. I mean, it wasn't too hard. You could like look stuff up on Wikipedia as like a starting point. But then, you know, you look up influences and stuff like that, and it just keeps on going down a deeper rabbit hole. So I can only imagine how much time and effort that took. Holy shit.
Yeah. I hope you can find the actual sheet, because it's worth it. It's worth a look.
I mean, if not, his email is right in his bio, so I will. I can always email him.
Definitely reach out if you can't find it. He'll link you to it.
For in your in terms for you in terms of your personal experience, what's one of the earliest games or the oldest games you found to have some type of accessibility features?
Well, if we get into that, then you get into what I call accidental accessibility, where a game might not be designed for us, but still kind of happens to work. And I think one of the there's quite a few, honestly. I think a good example is, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Virtual Fighter 2. I want to say it was 2. It could have been 2 or 3. One of those games, one of the early Virtual Fighter games, for some reason had narrated menus. It was just on for everyone. It wasn't a feature that was like designed for the blind. It was just they happened to narrate, the announcer of the game happened to narrate when you moved over an item, told you which one it was. And that's great. It worked for us, it was just something that was there. There's plenty of examples like that. Like Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi 3 has the same kind of thing where the characters from the show kind of expressively, animatedly discuss every item in the menu you're highlighting. Like, click on this if you want to go through the story of Dragon Ball. You know?
Yeah, like yeah.
That works for us. It's effectively menu narration. It's not the type of menu narration we're used to nowadays, but it works the same way.
I wonder if like there is a influx of that in like the mid to late 90s that like you said, accidental accessibility, because you know multimedia was such a big thing in the 90s, and once game developers could put voices into the game, they did it to a point where it was just like everything was narrated because they could.
It was like a stylistic approach. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if like a lot of games, I mean, I would hope so. I mean, but I wonder if a lot of games had that and it just had that accidental accessibility.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't encounter a lot of games that have it, but certainly there are a few that have it. And then of course there's the big example. I like to bring this up. Resident Evil 6 is a huge example of accidental accessibility. One of the biggest ones because of the one design choice they made, which then later influenced one of my design choices for The Last of Us 2. So there you go.
Really? What was the design choice?
So in Resident Evil 6, if you press the button that brings up the character's PDA, it brings up your map on screen. And on the map, it shows you an arrow pointing towards your next objective. But it also turns the camera in that direction. And in Resident Evil 6, your movement is based on where the camera is pointed. So we found out that if you just hold down the PDA button, have the map constantly on screen, sure, but you also automatically turn towards your objective. And if, as long as you're holding it, you walk forward and it keeps turning the camera towards your objective.
Oh, so that's so cool.
It is an accidental accessibility navigational assist. And we can basically almost completely play that game because of that one feature.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
That feature became my inspiration for the Nav Assist The Last of Us 2 has, which is actually built to be used by blind people. So there you go.
That's so cool. What would you say is like something that you wish more people knew about accessibility features in gaming?
I think I wish people knew that it's not as hard as you think. You know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about how the most challenging thing is convincing people that it's the right thing to do and that it can be done. I think the assumption is that we need more than we actually need. We don't, we don't want a game that plays itself. We want to experience the game, and we can do that using, you know, some things that are already in the games you're playing will help us play a game. Good audio design is an accessibility feature as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, there's even in The Last of Us 2, there are things that I can choose to check on my HUD, but I don't because I don't need to because the audio design is so good. A good example of that is you can find out because The Last of Us 2, we have full UI narration for the blind. So you can find out basically anything that's available on the HUD, and it will tell you if your silencer on your pistol is unequipped, or you know if you need to make one if you don't have one anymore.
Yeah,
it will tell you that. but I actually never have to check that because the audio design of the game is so good that when your silencer breaks, you can hear the little canister falling off of your gun and hitting the ground. That's how good it is.
That's awesome.
So I just pay attention to that. And by the way, it even goes further than that. The silencer canister that broke stays in the environment as an object for a little while. So if you move at any point, there's a decent chance you'll just kind of accidentally kick the canister on the ground, and even that makes a sound. But if you miss the falling, you'll probably still get it that way. It's great. It's just fantastic. It's just, but that's one example. I think there's a little bit of underestimation and overestimation, I think, when it comes to blind accessibility. And I think people just need to realize that it is complicated, but it might be less than what you're imagining it is. Also, I think one of the most important things is people need to stop equating accessibility with easy mode.
Yeah.
That is not what I'm trying to do at all. In fact, I specifically say to developers I work with that I'm not trying to make it easy mode. And the last developer I said that to was like, oh, thank God. Like, I was really worried that's what you were going to say. You wanted to, you know, it to be really easy. And, you know, I didn't want to be a part of that. But I was like, no, I'm not trying to make an easy mode. If you want to make a challenging game, make a challenging game. There's a difference between something being challenging and not being playable.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I have the information that I need to succeed, as long as I have whatever I need to actually play the game properly, then make it as hard as you want to. I mean, I just recently finished Last of Us 2 on the grounded difficulty, which is the highest difficulty in the game. And that was hard as heck.
Yeah.
But I did it.
And so, I was just going to say that kind of feeds into exactly what you're saying. You wish more people knew, like, it's not as much as you think it is. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a little odd to me that someone who isn't blind is trying to already plan ahead and determine, well, this is what someone who is blind will need, when it's like, no, like,
you, right.
Like that's, I don't want to say it's hubris, but it's just very strange to make those assumptions without having any grounds for those assumptions. You know, you're imagining what it would be like for you to just like walk around the world with your eyes closed, when that's not the same experience at all.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads to the ultimate thing that every sighted person needs to know, especially if you're going to get into game development. And that's simply this: use consultants. If you want to make a game accessible, I promise you, a consultant will help you. We want to help you because we want to play your game. We want to share that experience with everyone that we can share it with. And we know what we need. We know how to make your game accessible to, you know, us, to our group of people. And if we can't, you know, tell you how to make a game accessible to someone that has a different disability than we have, we can probably direct you to someone who can. And you know, if you do that, then you're going to get the best results. I promise you, because you may not know all the things that we need, or you may not be completely clear on what we need and what we don't need. Because you don't want to overdo it either. Like, it's possible to provide too many, like, you can do narration wrong. If your narration is full of unnecessary details, like, If a blind person is going through the menu and all they can hear is, this is a button. The button you're currently highlighting reads, you know, options. Like, if we have to sit through that every single time we hit an arrow key, that's too much. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it can be done incorrectly. So, you know, that's just one example, but just the narrative here is, consultants will help you get it done because we want to. We desperately want to play your game, and if with your help and with your cooperation, we will. That's my message to developers out there.
And I would even argue that by making their games more accessible to the blind, or just any or someone who's deaf, or any type of accessibility thing that you're trying to add, like, I feel like that could make the game even better for people who are sighted. Like, for example, you're talking about good sound design. One of the things gamers look for now more than anything is attention to detail. Like, gamers love it when you, like you're talking about the silencer in Last of Us 2, the sound effect of it popping off your pistol and dropping to the ground, the sound effect of your character kicking it. I did an episode on Red Dead Redemption 2, and this one is more of a visual thing, but it's just like the fact that like when you shoot a water trough, you can actually see the water draining out of it type of thing, you know, like, and that's, I don't know if that would actually help someone who's deaf in terms of gaming, but like the idea is like that attention to detail only increases the immersion for people who are sighted as well. So it's a win-win no matter what.
Yeah. There are plenty of stories. There are plenty of stories out there about accessibility features that are designed for one group of people helping out someone else. There's even a story that I have about The Last of Us 2, a feature that I designed, that I helped design, the previously mentioned navigational assistance feature. I found out after The Last of Us 2 launched that there was a person that was using the Nav Assist feature during the game's running sequences where you're trying to run to a certain spot or run away from something.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they did that is because they had basically kind of like a stress issue. They couldn't deal with kind of the high stress, the high intensity of not knowing where to go and just trying to run away from like an enemy or something.
Yeah.
And so they looked through the features and found our Nav Assist feature, which points the camera towards your objective and casts out little waypoints. And you basically go from waypoint to waypoint, which ultimately leads you to your objective. And they turned that on and realized that was going to solve their problem.
That's awesome.
And so for running sequences, they left that feature on, you know, they turned that feature on, used Nav Assist to get through the running sequence, didn't have to stress about it anymore, just had to run. And that was that. Like, that's amazing to me, because like I helped design that feature because I wanted the blind to be able to play The Last of Us 2, but unknowingly at the time, I was helping out someone else as well, and it's tremendous.
That's awesome. All right, so we're coming up to the time where we have to say goodbye. You have something going on in about 20 minutes, yep, so I want to start wrapping stuff up. So my final question before we kind of give our social media stuff is, well, I have two final questions. One, is there anything that you can talk about that's coming up, or anything that you worked on recently that you're allowed to talk about?
Oh boy. What I will say, I can't necessarily say what I'm working on directly, but I will say that there are big things coming in the world of blind accessibility. There are games that will have features that even The Last of Us 2 doesn't have right now.
That's exciting.
That are on their way. And I can't say anything more than that. I can't say what they are, but trust me when I say the blind have a lot to look forward to. And that doesn't mean anything. Like, that doesn't mean I'm going to stop anytime soon, because I have too many plans to stop now. But there are definitely some good things coming.
That's great. So my last question before we go into social media is, my wife likes to ask questions to the people I interview, because my wife is famously, to the listeners will know, not into video games, doesn't like geek, not really into any geek culture type of stuff. You know,
okay.
I'm way deep into video games and anime and all the movies and crap and whatnot, but she's not into all that stuff, but she still likes to ask questions. And her questions never involve the person that, like, what the person I'm interviewing does, which I find amusing.
Okay.
So her random question for you is, this is questions from Courtney. That's my wife. What's your favorite way to eat a potato?
I actually, all right.
I know. When she said that, I was like, all right, I guess I'm asking this one.
Favorite way, I guess, is probably mashed. I'm a big fan of the mashed potatoes. And I know this is kind of like the heathen thing to say, but I'm actually a huge instant potato guy.
I have nothing wrong with that.
No problem with instant potatoes at all. I love them. I think they're great. I think if with enough butter, it can be amazing.
I mean, anything with enough butter.
Right, exactly. That's it. That's my potato eating choice.
It reminds me, like, for me, like, I like, you saying it's a little sacrilegious to like the the instant mashed potatoes or whatever, the flakes. For me, like,
with people are like, they're not real. I'm like, I know, it's fine.
That's the best part. No, for me, with like mac and cheese, I don't like actual mac and cheese. It has to be the fake powder crap or like
the cheese sauce.
I know that's sacrilegious to a lot of people. Everyone loves like authentic mac and cheese.
I like both, so I'm okay with that.
For some reason, I just like the fake stuff. I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah, I get you.
So anyway, with all that said, Brandon, where can everyone find you online, and what's your social medias?
Well, luckily, I'm pretty easy to find. I am Super Blind Man almost everywhere. So you can find me on Twitter at Super Blind Man, YouTube.com/Super Blind Man for my YouTube video page, Twitch.tv/Super Blind Man if you would like to watch me stream video games live. Even Super Blind Man on PlayStation Network. And, if you want a bunch of links of mine, I'm on Linktree as well. So linktr.ee/Super Blind Man will get you to my Linktree, and that'll get you basically every one of those links. Or you can go to my website, which I highly recommend if you'd like to read some of the things I've written about games, brandoncole.net. And if you're a game developer, hey, what do you know? My hiring page is there too. Just so you know. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right. And as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do it in a couple different ways. Probably the easiest and cheapest for all y'all is just to give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. That helps more people find the show. If you want to support me monetarily, patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes a couple days early and at a higher bit rate, as well as access to a patron exclusive Discord. For $5 a month, you'll get all that stuff plus 2 extra bonus episodes a month. At the time of this recording, which this will actually be out like a month later, but the time of this recording, yeah, I just released an episode where I dubbed the Wild West of Gaming, and I talked about how Atari and Coleco and Mattel's and Television all published games that were developed by themselves on their competitors' consoles, which was just a strange concept to me. So I kind of looked at, I did a little short, brief history, not deep dive, but a little bit of a brief history on that. So if that interests you, patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. And the most important shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to go support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org. And actually, it's kind of on par with what we talked about today. They actually recently, within the last like month or so, donated 2 of Microsoft's accessibility controllers.
Nice.
To a hospital. I don't know which hospital. I forget. I'd have to check their social media, but they donated 2 of those. So go to bitbybitfoundation.org and check out all they have to offer. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading. Brandon, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Glad to have been here. Anytime. If you want me back, I'll probably come back too.
I would love to have you back on. We could probably, if there's any games you are super passionate about, I could have you on for those. Sure. That will do it for this
episode. Maybe we'll talk about some of these future games when I can actually talk about them. How about that?
That would be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I actually do have to do an episode on The Last of Us 2, because I did an episode with another podcast, JK Games, on the original Last of Us. It might be fun to bring them back and have you on to kind of like, as we talk about the game, you can talk about like different features that were specific maybe for you during the segments that we go through, because we usually break down the story like beat by beat.
Sure. I mean, if you want to do a Last of Us 2 episode, I'm all in. I mean, having the blind consultant that made it playable by blind people all over the world might not be a bad idea.
That would be a really fun discussion to have for it. So yeah, sure. I'll have to see when they would want to do that and when I would have it in my schedule. So okay, with all that said, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Right.